All right, we got a lot of different things coming at you today, okay? And I'm just sensing a little bit of a lull right now. That. We don't got time for that. All right, let's go. Crank it. Let it cross. Woo!
Ladies and gentlemen, can I please have your attention? I've just been handed an urgent and horrifying news story. And I need all of you to stop what you're doing and listen.
You're listening to Rock Chalk Sports Talk with Nick Schwert on the new FM 1017 and 1320 KLWN.
Hey, what's happening? Welcome in Rock Chalk Sports Talk on the new FM 1017 and 1320 KLWN with Derek Johnson. I'm Nick Schwert. Better late than never. On a little late because of those pesky Royals with that day game. Actually, it's not their fault. It's U2's fault. And I've probably, now we're about 4 years in, of me waking up every day with an extreme disdain for U2. Because they're performing tonight at Arrowhead Stadium, which is why the Royals played the game in the afternoon as opposed to playing a normal night game.
Why is this 4 years running?
Well, I was going to get to that. As many of you probably know, when you get the iPhone 6, when they came out with the iPhone 6,
I see where this is going.
It came equipped with a version of U2's latest album. Every single iPhone. You couldn't get the iPhone without getting the U2 album, which now is like, 3 years old? But at the time, I don't know what the partnership between Apple and U2 is, but there seems to be some pretty strong connection there. They use their songs in their commercials, or at least used to. Maybe Steve Jobs was just a huge U2 fan. I don't know. But the point is that every time I'm driving down the street and I've just got my iPod on shuffle, and then I'll come across one of those U2 songs. And I didn't choose those U2 songs. I don't want them on my iPod. I certainly don't want to listen to them while I'm driving down the street. And it just throws my whole rhythm out of whack. It happens almost every single day. And I thought that was the furthest extent to which U2 could affect my day in a negative manner. And I was wrong today, because U2 is playing at Arrowhead Stadium tonight. That meant the Royals had to move their game up to a day game at 12:15. And that means we get into the show half an hour late. It's inexcusable. It's absolutely inexcusable. The Royals do win, so at least there is somewhat of a silver lining there. But I'm sick of U2. I'm sick of them dictating my life. I'm sick of them imposing their will onto the way that I'm trying to live my life and do my job. I'm done with it. And I'm done with you too. And I hope they have a terrible show tonight. There you go. I said it. I hope Bono gets strep throat today. And he is just coarse and he's trying to sing and he just can't do it. I hope it's one of the worst shows of his career. I don't hope like anything bad happens to them. I just hope it's a bad show. You know, you have thousands of shows. A few of them are bound to be stinkers. I hope tonight's one of them. Unless you're going to the show, then I hope you have a great time anyways. So David Beatty spoke today, second weekly press conference of the season. We'll get to that audio coming up in a bit. Matt Tate at 4 o'clock. Kevin Flaherty of 24/7 Sports talking Big 12 football at 5 o'clock. We have a lot of audio to get to, including the NFL useless coaches montage. This one's a good one. If I were to tell you on the surface that and we have some new additions into the montage today. Ben McAdoo of the Giants is in. Chuck Pagano of the Colts is in. If I were to, because we know these guys have their crutches and they say their things a lot. If I were to give you three options, right? And these are all accurate, but I'm not going to give you numbers. If I were to say that Jason Garrett of the Cowboys says good job a lot today. If I were to tell you that Ben McAdoo of the Giants says got to watch the tape today, because people forget that. You ask the questions after the game, but I think people forget the fact that these coaches have to go watch the tape. I wish more people would understand that. If I were to tell you that Chuck Pagano of the Colts is going to say that it all falls on him, it's the head coach's responsibility. And again, something else I think a lot of people forget is that no matter what happens during a football game, it all falls on the coach's shoulders. It's his responsibility because he's the head coach. If I were to give you those three options, Jason Garrett, good job, Ben McAdoo, watch the tape, and Chuck Pagano, it's all on me. It's the head coach's responsibility. Which of those coaches do you think hits their respective crutch more often today?
Jason Garrett.
There's not a doubt in your
mind?
Not
even a doubt in my mind. I've never heard McAdoo, though, so he could be the wild card there. Pagano, I'm sure, said it a lot, but we've had times where, like, Jason Garrett says something like 15, 20 times.
Okay. And he's a robot, so if you tell him, hey, hit this 15 times today in the presser.
He's going to hit it exactly.
I'm telling you, it's going to be a tight race. You're going to have to keep track when we play that for you coming up in the 4 o'clock hour. We've got some David Beatty audio coming your way in just a little bit. And the more I sit back and think about that loss to CMU and chew on it for what it means for this program and what it means moving forward, it doesn't get any easier. If you're a diehard KU fan, it doesn't get any easier after a couple days to say, oh, well, you know, it's in the rearview mirror and you got to move on. Because the expectations for this season are heightened. And I think what we talked about a little bit yesterday is, you know, the idea that this was a reality check game for this program to say, hey, that buzz doesn't mean much if you can't go out there and take care of business against a MAC opponent in your home stadium. And moving forward, you got to go win a really tough game if you want to have momentum heading into Big 12 play. You've got to go to Ohio, a team who came in and whomped you pretty good last year in Lawrence. And you've got to go take care of them on their home turf. Now, it's not the same team. Got a new quarterback. They got two quarterbacks. So maybe that adds an extra wrinkle into this. I know that with David Beatty being in now year three, there was the idea, there were boosters who came out and talked about this, that this was kind of the year where you need to see that tangible progress. You need to start seeing some progress evidenced by the on-field product. And while we saw it in week one, the results didn't perhaps pan out the way we had hoped last week. It doesn't change the fact that the things we were saying in week one are still true. Because after week one, what were we saying? Were we saying that this defense is otherworldly? No. I mean, you let Simo, you beat Simo by, what, 22 points? What was it, 38-16? It's good. It's not great. You'd hope if a team like Simo comes in that you're going to be able to blank them. And they drove down the field and scored twice on you. But what we were taking away from that CMO game was that this offense looks completely different than what we've seen over the past couple of years. And while it didn't look great in the first half against CMU, it still holds true today. The offense still looks better than it has. The offense is still night and day better than what we've seen, not only over the last 2 years, but ever since Mark Mangino left. This decade, you know, 2010 till now, this is by far the best offense that KU's ever had. And I still think we are past the days of seeing KU go out and lose every Big 12 game by 20, 30 points. Like, I still think there are going to be some close plays in conference play. And it's you talked about this yesterday, Derek. It doesn't work on a linear scale, right? You won zero games in year one. Okay, well, you got a conference win in year two. Now it's time to get two conference wins. Now it's time to rack up three or four wins. It simply does not work like that. And trying to view sports, trying to view this team like with a binary way of thinking of, okay, well, it was one, then it has to be two, and then the next step is three or four. It doesn't work like that. Year one, weren't competitive in any games, right? Conference play, you were not competitive. Save TCU. We're not competing against Big 12 opponents. Last year, you were. And you were fortunate enough to get a win against Texas. And perhaps that one win is sticking in our heads a little bit too much, because that was, I don't want to take anything away and I don't want to disparage it. It was huge for the program, a huge momentum boost, helped them in recruiting, helped them in just the general vibes around the program heading into this year. But perhaps we tried to take that game and make it as though it's indicative of what's to come for KU. And maybe there will be another big win like that. But I feel like we're still taking that game and thinking that it's a springboard into more wins in the Big 12, and it simply doesn't work like that.
Well, and also, if you go back to that game, I mean, it took Texas having six turnovers, and then you go to overtime to beat a 5-7 team. So there's still a good gap that needs to be made up. It's not just as if that one win launched KU from the 0-12 team they were the year before to all of a sudden this team that's going to compete in every Big 12 game. There's still a sizable difference there, and I think that's what KU has to make up for. Now, last year in the non-con, you look at their three games. You had the Memphis game, Ohio, Rhode Island. Let's just talk about the Memphis game and the Ohio game. Both of those games, they were basically out of them. I mean, Ohio, for a little bit in the third quarter, you felt like you were in that game, but you lose by 16 at home to Ohio, and then you get blown out by Memphis. all right, well, you're in the same situation here with Central Michigan, so just go out against Ohio. Obviously, you want to get a win. But at the very least, make it a competitive ball game. Make it a one-score ball game, and there, you can find a little bit of improvement right there in the fact that, hey, at least this year, we were competitive in an extra non-conference game to where we weren't last year.
Yeah, and I think that maybe I'm wrong. Maybe the steps are going to be a little bit more gradual, and maybe this year isn't going to be as exciting as we expected it to. Nobody said that that David Beatty's job was easy. And if his job's not easy, then your job as a fan isn't going to be easy either. You know, that's just the way it's going to go. If you're willing to accept the fact that David Beatty had a very tough task taking over and he's still in a very tough position, then you have to be willing to accept the fact that it's going to be difficult as a fan to continue to stay patient. But we reference everything from year number one, right? The terrible shape in which the program was in when David Beatty inherited it. Just a gutted roster. Charlie Weiss left the cabinets just completely barren. And we knew that David Beatty was coming in and trying to essentially rebuild this program from scratch, from nothing. And that now we're in year three, and maybe you're thinking about getting a little fed up. Your patience is running thin, and you're checking your watch thinking, okay, well, how much time does this guy have left? I think that's an incredibly short-sighted way to view it. And if you are losing patience, I totally understand. But we have to see this thing through. It absolutely do, because the answer is not to start over once again. Like, they still got a golden opportunity in front of them this season. They've got a golden opportunity in front of them this week. I mean, if you just take it on the surface, a MAC team that you can go and steal a road win against, it'd be huge. Now, it's going to be a tough task because Ohio's a good team. They've been a good program under Frank Solich. Like, there's just no way around it. But that game on Saturday, Peyton Bender doesn't throw any – he didn't throw any touchdowns, right? Threw two picks. That's more than any other quarterback in the Big 12. If he throws one pick – and KU stops them on that final drive of the second quarter, we could be talking about a win. It's not. Don't just look at the margin of victory. Like, that game was closer than it may have felt like because of those big, long drives, and it just seemed like it was a futile effort trying to stop that CMU offense. It was closer than it looked. It really was. And I'm not predicting a win on Saturday, but I'm also not predicting that this season is over. And I hope that people who believe in David Beatty, and if you believed in him before the season, I think you should still believe in him. If you believed in the team before the season, I think you should still believe in this team because there's plenty of talent, much more than they've had in years past. They got a lot of work to do, but I don't think this season is over by any stretch.
No, it's so odd to me, though, that I sit back here, and when I look back at the Charlie Weiss days, I mean, KU was winning three games a year, which, obviously, not a big number, not a number you'd like. It got him fired, but compared to where KU is at now, you'd love three wins this season, yet it felt like in those years there was no hope. There was no rising up. And I feel that's what's different here.
Well, it's all relative to expectations. Like, yes. Charlie Weiss had these great expectations coming in, bringing these JUCO all-stars, bringing in Dane Crist and Jake Heaps and Justin McKay. Like, there was a lot of hope for the program, and he didn't live up to those expectations. Now, the expectations have been curbed a little bit with David Beatty, and I still wonder if we haven't quite pinpointed what those realistic expectations should be for him in year three.
I think we jumped the gun.
I think we did too.
Yeah.
We got a little bit excited this offseason because of the recruiting class, because of a guy like Peyton Bender, because you got Daylon Charlotte and Charles Baldwin, a couple Alabama guys. We started to connect all these dots, and you start to kind of figure out, man, maybe this team will be better than we expected. And maybe that's on us. Maybe it's on the people who were leading the hype train, but I guess at this point it's up to us to kind of pull the reins back and say, hey, listen, like, this team can still be on the right path without necessarily being on the path we thought they were. You have to be able to admit, right, when your expectations were just a little skewed. I think that's kind of the point I'm getting to with this team. It's 3:49 on the new FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN.
This is Rock Chalk Sports Talk with Nick Schwert on new FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN.
4 o'clock hours here, new FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN with Derek Johnson. I'm Nick Schwert. Appreciate you hanging out with us. We'll get back into that KU audio here from David Beatty. You can hear from Ryan Shadler, the quarterback, Peyton Bender, and much more coming up between now and 6 o'clock. But right now, let's welcome on our good friend back from the East Coast swing. It's Matt Tate of the Lawrence Journal World. How was the trip, man?
It was cool. I had a great time. I've never been to Boston or the area, so checking that out was okay. The traffic's miserable there. I've heard that before, but people were not lying. It is brutal. Fenway Park I got to check out, which was fantastically awesome. It was as good or better than the traffic was bad, so that evened out and maybe even was a plus. But the experience, the whole reason that I went, which was to cover Bill Self's induction into the Hall of Fame, was otherworldly is the only way I can describe it, man. It was, I thought it'd be pretty cool. I thought it'd be something fun. I thought we'd get a lot of great coverage out of it. I thought our readers and KU fans would really look forward to kind of checking it out. But it was 10 times cooler than that. It was a different experience than I expected. It was, it was almost like the Oscars. They had the red carpet treatment. They had celebrities left and right from the sports world mostly, but still pretty darn impressive. There's been plenty of impressive sports celebrities over time, and just the way that they treated Coach Self, the way the people that came back and went there to support him, from former players and assistant coaches to family members and all of that stuff. I mean, just the whole thing was just a really, really cool thing to witness and cover. And most importantly, Bill Self was absolutely content, smitten, happy, at peace, just comfortable, relaxed. I mean, the guy soaked up every ounce of that experience and took it all in and took it all in a very genuine manner and had a blast. And that's exactly what you should do when you're being inducted into the Hall of Fame. It shouldn't be a formality. It shouldn't be a business trip. It should be something that you remember for the rest of your life and you cherish. And he absolutely took advantage of it and made the most of it. It was really, really cool to watch that.
It had to be a little, not necessarily surprising, but just kind of fresh to see that, because Bill Self deflects attention when it comes to his personal accolades or records that he's accrued at KU. He always kind of defers to the players. He always deflects attention to other people. But you can't really, I mean, I guess you can, but when you're being inducted into the Hall of Fame, it really is all about you. So I'm sure that was a little different to see.
Yeah, well, and you're right. I mean, he did still do that. I mean, he was talking constantly about how he was very humbled, used the word we more than he used the word I, which is a really cool thing that he does, because I think it's genuine. He talks about his success and his 623 victories as something that we've accomplished, not something that I have accomplished. I mean, it's impressive and it's genuine and it's consistent, and that's him, you know. So he did still do that a fair amount last week, even while being inducted. I mean, talked about feeling inadequate, feeling like he didn't belong there yet, things like that. I mean, so there were definitely some deflections that happened, but, you know, the thing that was, I guess, the most impressive was just that he relaxed and enjoyed it. And you know, this is a guy who is constantly on, constantly in control, constantly, two steps ahead of everything that's happening. Even if it's in a post-game presser, he knows what he's going to say to the question that hasn't even been asked for 5 minutes, you know, and he's always on. He's sharp. He's got it together in every sense. And in this experience and in this environment, you know, it wasn't like he fell apart or anything, not even close. But what he did do was he kind of allowed himself to be in that moment and just kind of float through it as it happened. And you know, when they put the jacket on him, he was there. It wasn't like he had already thought, how should I react when they put this jacket on me? You know, he didn't do that. He didn't prepare. I mean, he wrote a speech ahead of time, but beyond that, everything else was a very organic experience. And for a guy who's so constantly and so successfully in control at all times, it was cool to see him just let that go and let his guard down a little bit and just live right there in that moment. And you know, he's shown signs of that throughout his coaching career here and there, but For the most part, you know, in order to be that successful and sustain that success, you do have to be buttoned up, and you do have to be two steps ahead or 10 steps ahead or whatever it is. So watching him just take it all in was really cool. And you know, there was a moment where Adidas had an after party for Bill Self and Tracy McGrady, because McGrady's an Adidas guy. He sold a billion shoes or something ridiculous during his day and still selling more. And so they had an after party there for all the friends and family members and players and things like that. And there was a moment in there where, you know, we were a few of us from the media anyway that went, were able to check that out. And it was pretty cool. That in itself was a pretty cool scene too. But I walked by Self, you know, on my way to get a ginger ale or something like that. And just him and just me. And I just said, hey, you know, cheers, congratulations. Cause you know, up to that point, we just asked him a bunch of questions and kind of covered it like we cover things. But that was my stories were done. It was just a real moment. And he, the first thing he said was, hey, thanks. Has this been pretty cool? Have you enjoyed this? Has this been pretty cool? You know, and I said, yeah, it's one of the coolest things ever. And he goes, okay, I don't think it's really sunk in for me yet. And I said, well, it will. And when it does, your mind's going to be blown. But that tells you, I mean, that little exchange, I think, tells you how in the moment he was. He hadn't allowed himself to really take it all in. He was just kind of living in it. And good for him, because, you know, you only get one shot at that. It's not like they're going to re-induct him 10 years from now when he's ready to kind of reflect. They put him in there now, and he took full advantage of it.
You mentioned all of the former players who showed up for the induction, and judging by the pictures I saw, there were a lot of them. And it wasn't just some of the older guys who are maybe working regular jobs and don't have anything better to do. I mean, guys from the league, whether it's Cheick Diallo or Brandon Rush or Andrew Wiggins, I saw was there. I imagine that had to be really cool for Bill Self, knowing that guys like Andrew Wiggins could be doing any number of things this time of year. They're probably getting invites and media appearances and all of these different things they could be doing with their time, but they showed up to kind of support their coach. That had to be a pretty cool moment.
No doubt, and I think he knew a lot of them were going to be there. You know, I think he invited a lot of them to come, which was cool. I mean, that part was particularly cool, I think, for the Oral Roberts guys and the Tulsa guys, because, you know, this guy's gone on to Illinois and Kansas and won a title and been to Final Fours. And, you know, I think in their minds it'd be easy for them or for him to kind of forget them. But he didn't, and he hasn't, and he won't, you know, and he's made that very clear. So for those guys to be invited and, you know, for him to reach out to them and say, I want you to be here, I think that was as cool as anything. Yeah, it was cool to see Mario Chalmers and Andrew Wiggins and Sharon Collins and yada, yada, yada. But it was as cool as anything to just see those guys that were kind of anonymous. You know, a guy named Blake Moses, a guy named James Cruz. I mean, names you've never heard of, guys that are working real jobs, like you talked about. You know, those guys are there, you know, dressed in their suits and tuxedos and you know, rubbing elbows with the likes of some of the biggest names in basketball. I mean, what a cool scene. What a cool thing. So, yeah, there's no doubt. I mean, Self, he made no secret of the fact that the whole thing that meant the most to him about the entire experience was the opportunity to kind of look back and reflect on those relationships that he had built in the game of basketball at all those stops. And, boy, that lived up to it, because it was cool enough in and of itself, just being sort of an all-classes kind of KU reunion. You know, you had guys that never played together, never even knew each other, coming together and hanging out, you know, Christian Moody hanging out with someone like Frank Mason, you know, or whatever. I mean, Sharon Collins hanging out with some of those guys that came way before him on the first KU teams that Self had and things like that, you know, and so to see that was pretty cool. But then when those Illinois guys and those Tulsa guys and those Oral Roberts guys were not only there and present, but also brought into that circle, and it wasn't about where you went to school or where you played or where you didn't play. It was about, hey, we're all Bill Self guys, and we have that in common, and we all love him, and darn it, he obviously loves us. So let's just have a good time and celebrate the heck out of this thing. And so, you know, that turned a pretty cool reunion of just what would have been cool from a KU perspective into into something even cooler, because it was just it just took on a life of its own and had such a bigger and more profound sort of existence.
We're talking to Matt Tate of the Lawrence Journal World here on the new FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN. So obviously you were out there this weekend, not in Lawrence for the Kansas football game, but I know you got to catch some of it. Something that we talked about in the first segment of the show today is the fact that even if you can accept that the fact that it was a very disappointing outcome and a disappointing performance without having to say that everything we were saying in week one was necessarily inaccurate. I know you mentioned, or you at least spoke to some people about this on Twitter, that's the way I'll phrase it, about the fact that, you know, it looked like a different team in week one, and then all of a sudden that happens in week two. I think if we're talking about this team looking different in week one, we're talking about that offense, and even though it wasn't as good as what we saw against SEMO, this offense and the ability to move the ball down the field and the weapon of receivers they have, I mean, nothing changes there. That is still otherworldly better than what we've seen really over the past decade.
Yeah, I agree. And you know, here's the deal. For whatever it is now, 7-8 years, Kansas fans have been miserable on Saturdays. They've had to watch these awful football teams and bad products with, you know, less talent than the opponent, less hope than everybody. I mean, you know, it's been a rough go for fans and the program. And throughout that time, you know, the offense was largely to blame. It was often the fact that they couldn't move the ball, get a first down, score a point, throw a touchdown pass to a receiver. I mean, there was a laundry list of sort of just laughable shortcomings that this offense had. And so during that time, what you kind of heard resonate from all corners of the fan base was, you know, this sucks, but I'd like it a lot more if we were getting beat 55-31. You know, if we're going to lose by 24 points or whatever it is, man, let's at least put some points up and show that we have a little bit of a chance and some excitement, and don't make me go up there and watch these 27-3 or 31-10 type blowouts that are just, we have no shot because we can't score. And so you heard that from the fans over and over and over and over, and then what you get on Saturday, you got 45-27, and that was exactly what happened. The offense put up some points, particularly there in the third quarter, looked like a team that could move the ball and score some points and maybe had a chance, and then the defense gave it back. And so, you know, it's sort of damned if you do, damned if you don't, because now they've experienced opportunities or situations, I guess, where they couldn't score, and so they didn't have a chance to win. But now they do move it a little bit. They do have some weapons, and they can score a little bit, and they're still not putting themselves in positions to win. So, yeah, you know, I think we did a podcast the other day on our new podcast, the KU Sports Hour. It's a full hour. We do football and basketball versions. And Bobby Nightingale pointed out that I think he saw it on Twitter or maybe even heard somebody say, this is the first time that I've been disappointed in a David Beatty team. And I hadn't really thought of it in those terms, but, you know, year one, you give them the benefit of the doubt. It's a new coach taking over a mess. You don't expect much. Year two, same sort of thing. You know, it's year two. You're hoping to take some steps forward, but you're not really expecting a whole lot. Well, now year three, with the offseason that they had and the buzz and the excitement that's kind of around the program and some new faces that get you fired up, there is some excitement. There is reason for people to hope and get excited. And so when you can't beat a team that was picked fifth in its division in the MAC at home, a team that you're favored to beat, that is disappointing. And I think it's fair for people to feel that way. So the loss dropped them to 1-1. The loss is one game out of 12. The loss is something that happened in early September. It's disappointing, no question. But I think the bigger factor is what that one single loss did to this fan base, and it just ripped into this chest of this fan base and pulled the heart out and stomped on it, and these people are you know, right back down in the dumps like they were for the past 6-7 years.
And I think you talk about the hype that kind of started to build up this offseason. It almost seems like, just basing it off of the initial reaction from a lot of people I talked to and heard their comments from, is that hype's almost working against them now, because those expectations are raised. You lose on Saturday, and then people automatically go to the fact of, well, they're going to fall short of expectations this year, the first real season in which there were expectations for David Beatty. But going back to my initial question, I still don't think that that loss means that this team is not capable of taking a step forward. Now, maybe they're going to not surpass our expectations that we kind of set up for them from the outside, but it still doesn't mean that progress isn't being made on the field and that this team isn't headed in the right direction.
Totally agree. I mean, you look at Daniel Wise, you look at Dorrance Armstrong, those guys when they were freshmen were, you know, okay. They were nothing special. They couldn't play. They didn't play. They didn't play a ton. And now they're a couple of beasts, man. Those guys are defensive linemen that probably anyone in the country would love to have on their team. You know, whether they start or not, who knows, but they would play for just about everybody. And so you can't say because they lost to Central Michigan that those types of things, that type of development didn't happen or doesn't count. It does count. And it is a sign that this program is taking steps forward. But yeah, year three, because of all those things that I just mentioned about being favored at home and Central Michigan standing in the preseason and how they struggled to beat Rhode Island in week one and things like that. I mean, I guess it's sort of like you put those two things on the scale and you've got this legitimate claim to development and progress and baby steps and things looking good and looking better and there being hope because there's more athletes on the depth chart and there's depth on the depth chart and all those things. So you put that on the left scale and then you put this crushing defeat against a team that you probably should have beaten, everybody expected you to beat, and you put that on the right side of the scale, and you see where it falls. And I think right now there's no question, at least from the outside, that right-hand side is much, much heavier and weighing, sinking lower to the ground than the left side. Now, that may not be the case in the locker room. That may not be the case at practice. That may not be the way these coaches and players are choosing to look at this, and it shouldn't be. You know, I liked what I heard from some of those guys, particularly Joe Dineen, who said, you know, this isn't the end for us. We got a lot of football left, and we're going to get better, and it's my job to make sure we do and we stick with it. And so it's nice to hear that. You know, hats off to that kid for that because it shows what he's made of and the type of leader that he is. But you know, Beatty talked after that game, I think, about the perception versus reality thing. And at some point, the perception, as much as reality matters and is what it is, perception matters too. And right now, that scale example that I talked about is the perception of this thing. And this program is perceived to be a team that's, you know, weighing itself down with negative right now. And they could bounce back. They could go up to Ohio and pick up a huge win against a good football team. And I wouldn't put it past them. I don't know that they'd do it. I don't know that I'd bet $4 on it. But there's nothing that says they can't. So that makes this week as big as last week. But even if that's the case, even if they go, let's say they do go beat Ohio and kind of pull a surprise, I think at that point you're only getting 10 to 15% of those people back on that bandwagon who were ready to go last week. If you move to 2-0, they're all on and they're thinking 3-0 and they're excited and there's some genuine enthusiasm. Well, now you lose to Central Michigan, all those people hop off, and even if you go beat Ohio, I think you're only pulling a little bit of that crew back on. You got to do something better or more special after that and show that that game wasn't a fluke because right now people are just so cynical about it, and it's hard to blame them. It's really hard to blame them for being disappointed and frustrated, and, you know, you got to take it with some reality and just perspective, but... Yeah, I don't blame anybody for being tired of this. It's crazy to see that it's happening again because I think you probably thought this. I know I did. I really thought this year was going to be a little bit different. I didn't think they were going to win 6, but I thought they could win their non-conference games and maybe have some fun in that way. And right now they're 1-1, so not heading in that direction.
He's Matt Tate of the Lawrence Journal-World and KUSports.com. Always appreciate the time, my man. Thank you once again.
Yes, sir. Thanks, Nick. Appreciate it. And, hey, man, congrats to you. I know I gave you a little shout on Twitter, but thrilled for you. And they couldn't have picked a better person. And, man, it's going to be great having you around and doing more of that. And, you know, I mostly like to see on your Facebook account there that you just claim that those post-game videos of you walking to your car are not going to die, you know, that you're going to try to keep that going.
The people's champ for a reason, Matt.
That's right. And you know what? when I saw that, I thought this to myself: we all win today. That's what I, you know. So I'm happy for you. It's a great thing for you personally and professionally, and you deserve the hell out of it. So good for you. But I think we all win in that situation. We get to hear more of you on the radio, and we get to continue to walk with you to your car on bitterly cold nights after Kansas wins. So looking
You're too
forward.
Nice, man. Too nice. Very kind words. I enjoy it when you lay it on thick, especially when you're talking about me, man. So I appreciate that.
Well, it is thick, but it's also genuine. I just like to be a clown for you.
Thanks again, man. I appreciate it, man.
Yeah, man. No problem. We'll talk to you soon.
All righty. That's Matt Tate of the Lawrence Journal-World and KUSports.com. It's 425 on the new FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN. Yeah, I enjoy compliments. I enjoy receiving compliments, contrary to popular belief. Just send them my way. I'm very good at receiving them. So if you got anything for me, let me know. Today's Tuesday, the Tuesday news break coming up next, Sergio Dipp, the man who's taking the sports nation by storm.
This is Rock Chalk Sports Talk with Nick Schwert on new FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN.
Half past the hour, new FM 101.7, 1320 KLWN. Kevin Flaherty of 24/7 Sports will join us at the top of the 5 o'clock hour. We'll talk some Big 12 football with Kevin at 5. We've got some more David Beatty and KU football audio to get your way between now and 6 o'clock. But for now, let's get to the Tuesday news break, and we start with a double dose of Monday Night Football. The first game between New Orleans and Minnesota was just the regular Monday Night Football crew, featuring John Gruden, Sean McDonough, and I don't know who their sideline reporter was, but that's your run of the mill Monday Night Football. But because it's the first week of the season, it's two Monday Night Football games. So the late game, the West Coast action, it was a very interesting collection of broadcasters. First, you had the first female to ever broadcast an NFL game on TV. Her color analyst was none other than Rex Ryan, former Jets and Bills coach who has never broadcasted an NFL game in his life. That certainly showed. And then their sideline reporter, who I guess with Sergio Dipp is his name, and I guess with him the narrative is quality over quantity, because he was only featured one time in last night's broadcast. Perhaps you'll find out why. I actually think this evidence would point to him being featured more during the game. He cut in early in the first quarter with a sideline report. We didn't hear from him again. I don't know why. You take a listen for yourself and be the judge.
Beth, coach, it's a pleasure to be with you guys here on the field from up close, just watching Coach Vance Joseph from here. You watch him now on the screen. This diversity in his background is helping him a lot tonight. Quarterback at Colorado, defensive back in the NFL, and here he is having the time of his life this night, making his head coaching debut.
And the funniest part about that is they were cutting to Vance Joseph, and he is just stoic, stone-faced on the sideline. Did not look like a man who was having the time of his life. Now, immediately this went viral. Everybody on social media was talking about this Sergio Dipp guy, very obviously nervous. Okay, it's his first game broadcasting on national television. He's been with ESPN since 2013, and you may not be able to tell from that audio, that was his first time ever broadcasting a game in English. He is Spanish. Spanish is his first language. His first game ever broadcasting in English, NFL, Monday Night Football, week one. You could imagine how a guy in that sort of a situation might be a little nervous to come on the air for the first time.
But I think he owned up to it. If you look at his social media, he owned up to it so well, and he just like rolled with the punches, and he made himself kind of a celebrity.
He did.
Out of this.
And I get ESPN, like something like that happens, it goes viral, everyone's talking about it, and your initial reaction in today's society is that the reaction is going to be overly negative. Right? Like, people are going to come out and just crucify this guy. He sucks. Why is he on TV? And of course, there's instances of that last night. But from what I saw, people loved it. Like, people embrace the fact that this guy was really nervous and he had a bad show and that we were excited to see him on the TV again. They didn't give him another second of airtime in that broadcast, and I think it's a shame for ESPN to run from that. I get it. Protect your guy. Like, that was probably embarrassing for him, and you don't want to throw him out there again and have him just, like, double down on it, because if it went on all night, yeah, maybe the press is a little bit more negative. But I thought my heart was warmed by the positive support that this guy received afterwards. Like, let's see him again. Like, hey, let's give it another shot. But they didn't. They just kind of walled up around him, and I was a little disappointed by that.
Well, and I think he did, as I said, help himself. You notice if you go on his Twitter, he like tweeted like right after it happened. Something that, hey, everything's good, all this stuff.
He tweeted out a video, like, apologizing.
Yeah, well, he tweeted out some emojis, like, immediately after. And so maybe this came from ESPN, where he had to apologize. I don't know. I think that...
Well, he apologized for saying, I didn't mean to offend Vance Joseph. Because in that clip, he says his diverse background, you know, helps him with experience in the NFL. It was a game with Vance Joseph and the Chargers coach, Anthony Lynn. It's two first-time Black NFL head coaches. So that was clearly kind of the theme that he was trying to convey in that message, and it probably got lost in the delivery, but he's like apologizing for offending the guy. And it to me, it's just, I say this all the time. We need to ban the apology. Baker Mayfield yesterday had to apologize for sticking the flag in midfield at Columbus. And now this kid, Sergio Dipp, feels compelled to come out and apologize after having what was already probably a pretty embarrassing experience for him on the biggest stage imaginable. And he's out there saying, like, I'm sorry. I'm sorry for offending anybody. Like, it's so, like, and this is one of those instances where I just feel bad for the guy. Like, you shouldn't have to apologize for that. I hate this culture to where if somebody screws up in any sports platform, they immediately have to come out and apologize for it to let everybody know how sorry they are. And then we get to wring our hands and say, oh, okay, well, you apologized, so we'll let it slide on to the next one. Let's wait for the next guy to screw up so we can demand his apology too.
Well, it's not even that. It's like, let's just make people apologize for things that aren't even that bad. Like, you brought up the Baker Mayfield thing. There should be no reason to apologize for that.
I think it's a good thing that athletes do things to make other athletes mad, and then all of a sudden there's some contention. But instead of that, we just immediately jump to the word controversy. Oh, that was a controversial act by Baker Mayfield to plant the flag.
It was fun.
It was
celebration.
Fun. And every time the word controversial comes up, the entity involved, in this case, the University of Oklahoma, is like, well, if we did something controversial, we better apologize for it to make sure nobody holds it against us. And that is what makes everything so boring. It makes it so lame that it makes guys like Baker Mayfield, the next instance that comes up, not want to do it. Because they know, oh, you know what, if I go plant this flag at midfield, it'd be awesome. Everybody would love it, but a few people would take offense to it, and then I'd be forced to apologize, so I'm just not going to do it. Why do you think we complain about our athletes being robotic, about our head coaches being robotic? Head coaches 20 years ago gave you great sound bites. They don't do it anymore because the magnifying glass is just too hot on them, and they just can't do it. Like, I'm just going to have to backtrack and apologize later, so I'm not going to do it. I love that Baker Mayfield showed, you know, actual emotion after what was a really good game and a huge win. But the fact that he had to back it up with apology, I think that's just kind of weak. I get why Oklahoma did it, but I just wish that there would be some big entity like that to take a stand and say, you know what, we're not going to apologize. It was fun. It was cool. We understand some Ohio State fans are mad, but beat us next time. Don't let us come to your place and win, and then you won't have to worry about it. It's 438, New FM 101.7. This is your news break on Rock Chalk Sports Talk. So Ted Cruz had an interesting night on Twitter last night. First, if you're familiar with the podcast, pardon my take, it's like the biggest sports podcast in the world behind Rock Chalk Sports Talk, which, by the way, you can find on iTunes. Just search for Rock Chalk Sports Talk. But the second biggest podcast in the world, pardon my take, and they did this poll on Twitter. Said, who's the biggest football guy of the week, right? And it had a couple different people on there. Doug Marrone, for the coach of the Jags. And Blake Bortles was one of the guys. One of Blake Bortles' wide receivers went down with a knee injury on Sunday. And Bortles walked up to him as he's laying on the ground and gave him like a little, like, you know, pep, like just a little slap, like you'd slap a guy in the back, like, come on, you're going to be okay. But instead of slapping him on the back, he slapped him in the knee that Allen Robinson just blew out. Like, seconds after blowing his knee, Blake Bortles is coming over there and slapping that knee. Like, come on, just, you'll be all right. Just rub some dirt on it. I got your back, man. So he was nominated for Football Guy of the Week by this podcast, as was Ted Cruz, who was at the Houston Texans game wearing a J.J. Watt jersey, taking a picture with a bald eagle. And he's like, oh, that's a Football Guy move. And they asked the poll, you know, who's the Football Guy of the Week? And Ted Cruz weighed in on it by saying that something, he said losing to Blake Bortles twice in 1 week. And it was funny. It was, oh, Ted Cruz has personality. Oh, this is fun. So it seemed like it was a good night for Ted Cruz on Twitter until somebody stumbled upon the fact that in the wee hours of the morning, Ted Cruz liked a tweet from like a pornographic Twitter account that had like a link of like a 90-second video.
With some pictures on it.
Yeah, of like a pornographic scene. Ted Cruz since then has said that somebody,
of course,
sent a tweet to him, which made Twitter say that he liked it. So he's,
wow.
So
for that excuse,
right? But first, I thought it was going to be a hack, right?
Like, yeah, or an intern did it.
An intern did it. A staffer did it. They have said that they're looking in to find out which staffer on the Ted Cruz staff was responsible for it. Wouldn't it be more endearing to the public if Ted Cruz just came out and said, you know what, man? It was a long night. I was winding down, and I saw a video that piqued my interest. I gave it a little thumbs up, and that's it. So what? Sue me. Wouldn't that... Now, would it hurt his political aspirations?
Yes, because his whole campaign is running like
the ultimate,
opposite of
ultimate
that.
Conservative, yeah. Like family man values, Christian values. So yeah, maybe it wouldn't help him. But from my vantage point, somebody who is indifferent at best on Ted Cruz, at least it would give him a little bit of personality,
just
right?
Just go rogue.
That's what
at this
politicians
point, right?
are lacking.
Just go rogue.
Exactly. Politicians. Everybody else is zigging, you zag. Politicians have no personality. They walk the straight and narrow. Let's get a guy who's not afraid to say, you know what? I watch porn.
Yeah, well, every other politician is saying, you know what? My intern did it. You know what? It was an accident. Didn't mean to click
it
on it.
It was me.
Yep.
Deal with it. Cruz 2020. It's 442 on the new FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN.
What's the question? What's the question?
I'm getting to it.
Get to the question.
Bad defense, bad coaching, bad plan, bad football.
How do you keep this from snowballing?
It's
like
not going to snowball. Next question.
Got to coach better.
Is that good enough for you?
Yes, I was just asking about how it was different from last year's losing by one possession.
Losing by one possession?
Yeah.
No, it was 1 point.
Okay,
thanks.
Got to practice better. Got to play better.
We have a lot of improvement to do, obviously.
We all got to do a better job.
We have to coach better. We've got to play better. And that's it.
We got a lot of work to do.
You have to do a better job.
Obviously, there's so much we got to clean up.
You know, there are things that he can do better, things that I can do better to help him.
We have a long, long way to go.
Well, it's one of 16 games.
It's a long season, John.
One game does not define a season.
It's a long season.
I'm not going to slide that down that pole.
It's 16-game season.
There's not one guy in that locker room that will slide that down that pole.
You know, there's 16 teams that are 0-1, 16 that are 1-0.
It's a good football team.
There was some good and, you know, there was obviously some bad.
He's physically tough. He's mentally tough.
One game does not define a season.
Yeah, you know, it's National Football League.
We were dominated in this football game. In all three phases.
We're going to watch the tape.
We're going to go back and look at the film.
Hard for me to talk about that right now until we see the film.
We need to go back, take a look at the film.
So he'll watch the tape.
Again, we have to go back and take a look at the film.
We're going to watch this tape.
I'm not going to comment on that until I look at the tape.
Football's about adversity.
Outcoached in this football game.
Though we did a good job controlling the line of scrimmage.
It's my responsibility.
I thought we did a good job controlling it with a good mix of run and pass.
And it falls on me.
I thought we did a good job tackling.
It all starts with me.
I thought our team did a good job of that.
And I didn't do a good enough job.
Did a good job of that in our preparation this week.
That's squarely on the head football coach.
He did a good job controlling the game for us.
That's on me.
You know, Zeke did a really good job.
But it was bad ball on the head football coach.
He does a really good job of that.
And I take ownership in that.
And he came in Brandon just did a really nice job for us tonight.
Again, that falls on me.
You know, DeMarcus did a really good job for us.
That's on me.
It's a progress league.
We've got a lot of work to do.
We have a long week to get better as a football team, and we have a lot of work to do.
Obviously, there's so much we got to clean up.
We all got a lot of work to do.
We have a lot of improvement to do, obviously.
I'm not going to make any excuses.
We got a lot of work to do.
We're not going to make any excuses as a football team.
There's a lot of things we need to work on. We need to get to work. We need to improve.
We're not going to make an excuse.
Next question.
This is Rock Chalk Sports Talk with Nick Schwert on new FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN.
5 o'clock hour here, new FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN with Derek Johnson. I'm Nick Schwert. Appreciate you hanging out with us. An abbreviated RCST. We got in early, or got in late, I should say, because of that Royals Day game. I blame you too. I blame Bono. Just like I blame him every time I'm listening to my iPod in the car and one of those songs that Apple decided to put on my iPhone starts playing. And it just ruins my vibe, but I'm going to try and get over it as we welcome Kevin Flaherty of 24/7 Sports onto the program. Kevin, I said in the last hour, after Baker Mayfield was, in parentheses, forced to apologize after planting that flag in midfield at Ohio State, we need to ban the apology in sports. Do you agree?
You know, I think that we should ban apologies all over the place
okay.
if you don't mean it.
I agree. Oh, we're banning insincere apologies.
But the funny thing about that apology, and I'm glad that you brought up both Baker Mayfield and the iPhone together, because I don't know if you saw from this afternoon, if you ask Siri who owns Ohio Stadium right now, apparently she will say Baker Mayfield, and we'll pull up Baker Mayfield's information.
Derek, put that to the test. I want you to ask Siri right now who owns Ohio State, because I saw that same thing, and I don't know who is responsible for that.
I think it was George Schrader from was it USA Today that posted that, maybe?
Yeah, I think so. I think you're right. Yeah, I saw that same thing. But it was just... It's you know what, you go and you get a win like that, like, you deserve to have some swag, and if that means you own Ohio State, if that means you get to plant the OU flag at midfield, I say so be it. Who are we to say that these college kids can't have emotion and do some things that make each other mad?
Well, and I said, actually, right after, you know, all of it became a big deal, I said the person who has the toughest job at this point isn't Baker Mayfield, because I think we all knew that an apology of some sort was probably coming.
Yeah.
But it's Lincoln Riley, because to some extent, that's what makes Baker Mayfield who he is. You know, that's what gives him, you know, you use the word swag. He has that swagger to be able to walk into Ohio Stadium in that kind of environment and throw for 384 yards and three touchdowns. And so it's one of those things that, as a coach, you really, I think, almost have to be careful how you handle it, because on one hand, you have to say, okay, you know, maybe he shouldn't have done it or whatever, but you can't be too heavy-handed with it, given that, you know, that's a big part of what makes Baker Mayfield the player that he is.
Only been 2 weeks of college football, but, I mean, that has to be the most impressive win of the season thus far, doesn't it?
Oh, sure, absolutely. And I think, you know, it's so funny. I think we're so used to Alabama just doing what they do that people have almost already forgotten about the Florida State game, and obviously that
right.
was a close game. But the way that they beat a top three team on a neutral field at that point. But no, I think if you watch that entire game, it wasn't just apparent that Oklahoma was better than Ohio State. What was apparent was how much better. And if some things didn't go against Oklahoma in the first half, if they didn't make some mistakes and some other things, we could have been talking about Oklahoma blowing out Ohio
right?
State at Ohio Stadium the exact same way Ohio State did to Oklahoma last year.
And here's what I don't get. If we're both able to agree on the fact that if it's not the best win in college football, it's certainly 1A if you have Alabama beating Florida State as the first one, how in the coaches' poll does Oklahoma not receive one vote, not one vote, as being the number one team in the country? It makes no sense to me.
You know, it's interesting because I think his formula produces some really wonky results, and one of them I think this week was Duke at number 13. But if you look at, you know, like CBS Sports has Tom Fornelli, who does a formula that just accounts for what teams do on the field this year, and he won't put his formula out. He says, I'm not a mathematician. It's not exactly very scientific. But he had Oklahoma number one based on what has gone on the field.
Right? And isn't that all that should matter? Right? Shouldn't we remove our preseason expectations or what you did last year?
It should. And I know that, you know, as Kansas people, you know, you saw in 2007 how much weight I think those preseason expectations can have in terms of having a program that works its way all the way up to number two in the country, mm-hmm. doesn't have a single loss until the last game of the season. And if you remember right, you know, at the very end of that year, it was almost like reporters all huddled up and said, wait a minute, the poll is really screwed up right now. Let's totally throw everything back into the pool and rank people. And Kansas came out, what, ninth, I think, at that point?
Yeah.
And wound up at number seven. And so you have one loss, and that's sort of where you end up. But preseason expectations matter, and that's a big part of the reason why a lot of people are sort of happy that those polls, you know, supposedly don't come into play with regard to the college football playoff, is because we've seen over so many years that where you start off in the preseason poll can mean everything.
And we're talking to Kevin Flaherty of 24/7 Sports here on the new FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN. I've floated this theory out. I think we do away with the AP poll. I think we do away with the coaches poll because nobody who votes for either one of those polls is really sitting down and watching every single game in a weekend. And that, to me, is the goal. We need to find people who actually have the time to sit down, be locked in a room, and just watch nothing but college football until they've seen every game from a weekend. There's only one category of people on this planet who are capable of doing that. It's our prison inmates, and I think those are the people who should be deciding our college football rankings. I think it's a foolproof plan.
Depending on their cable package, absolutely, or satellite package, absolutely. You know, I do need to see, you know, what their quote-unquote man cave, which could mean something very different in prison, what the man cave looks like and what the setup is to make sure that they have the ability to view all that. But you're absolutely right. I mean, Nick, you and I have covered football games on Saturdays for how long? And when you go and cover a game, I don't think a lot of people understand the sheer time investment that you have in terms of showing up at the stadium a certain amount of time early, staying after the game. Right. And by the end of the day, you've legitimately maybe watched two college football games over the course of that whole day. And then you're asking that same person, you know, to go ahead and go out and vote on who the best teams in the country
exactly.
are. It doesn't make a lot of sense.
Well, another team with a big win. Oklahoma was a big one. I think they deserve to be number one in the country. But TCU went on the road and gets a win in Fayetteville against Arkansas. Are they a team who is maybe not so quietly becoming the surprise story of the Big 12?
You know, I don't know if they're the surprise story. They're such a fascinating team for me because I think that they're still not as good at quarterback as they have been. And I know that's not exactly saying a whole lot when the previous guy was Trevone Boykin, who's obviously terrific. But I don't know if TCU winds up in a game against the top teams in the Big 12, whether it's Oklahoma or Oklahoma State or even Kansas State, whether Kenny Hill is going to be able to lead that offense to a point where they can compete and win those games. And that's a really interesting question for me because I thought the defense also was not maybe as good as it has been in some previous years, but the defense was excellent against Arkansas, and they won a game, you know, kind of the ugly way. I mean, they didn't have 400 yards of total offense. They played great defense. They ran the ball, and they did what they had to do to come out with I thought, a pretty impressive win over Arkansas.
And for K-State, just quietly churning along at number 18 in the nation, first two games, 55 points in both of them. And if I were to tell you before the game, hey, Jesse Ertz is going to throw for 178 yards and he won't throw for a single touchdown, and KU would put up, or K-State would put up 55 points, you'd say, well, how is that going to happen? Well, they'll do it by rushing for 300 yards and five touchdowns. This just seems like the type of Bill Snyder Kansas State team that is going to get no respect. They'll probably go and beat Vanderbilt this weekend, and then all of a sudden by the end of the season, they're going to be right up there in the top 10.
I think I saw a stat over the weekend that was basically Bill Snyder has never had quarterback come out and lead 50-point efforts in their first two games with the exceptions of Michael Bishop and Colin Klein and now Jesse Ertz. And not that, you know, with the competition that Kansas State's playing, obviously that factors in. But at the same time, this is a team that I do feel like a lot more people should be paying attention to. And the interesting thing about them is the fact that you think of K-State as sort of being this opportunistic team that's going to bend but not break, and they're going to kind of make one more play than they have to make to win the ball game. And this isn't that kind of team. This seems to be the type of team that can really put their foot down and blow somebody out if they have to. And when you look at their weapons that they have offensively, I know they scored two defensive touchdowns last week as well. And this looks like a Kansas State team that maybe could be a little bit better than maybe the preseason prognosticators had them.
And for Baylor, I think we all expected they were going to be a team that would certainly have a down year with new head coach Matt Rhule, but losses to Liberty and UT San Antonio, I don't think anybody saw that coming. How surprised have you been that reality is starting to land down in Waco?
Very surprised, because a lot of the pieces that they had coming back were guys like Chris Platt, you know, who's a terrific athlete, a wide receiver. They've got several good running backs. And so I think to some extent, I thought Baylor would have a down season, like you said, maybe wind up in that 5-7 to 6-6 range. But I still thought they would have enough on hand to sort of out-athlete the teams that they went up against who wouldn't be quite as good. And that just hasn't proven to really be the case. I mean, their first game, they really struggled defensively against Liberty and Turner Gill, of all people. And then in the second game, the offense, you know, couldn't really get anything going. And they made the quarterback switch to Zach Smith. But the really interesting thing to me, I think, will be, do they make any other changes on offense to make life easier for Zach Smith? Do they go back to more of a vertical throwing type of offense where they can take advantage of the speed of some of those wide receivers? And even so, is the defense good enough to slow down the offenses that they're going to be playing in the Big 12? At this point, you know, obviously Kansas has had its struggles last week, but at this point, that's a game that Kansas fans should look at and think, you know, man, you know, that could be a Big 12 win for us.
And that's obviously a long ways down the road for KU, and I'd be remiss if I didn't ask you about your thoughts on that loss to Central Michigan. High expectations coming into the year. That seemed like really the last game where you felt really good about it if you're a KU fan, and your chances of getting a win. Obviously, it didn't go as according to plan. Did that catch you off guard at all?
It did. It did. I think sometimes we, and I'll put myself in this category, forget just how young this team is. And I'm not saying that that's an excuse for everything, but they have five seniors on the depth chart. And I the reason I bring that up is not necessarily, again, to excuse the Central Michigan game, because I do think that was a game that was there for them that they could have won. But what I'm saying is because of that youth, I think you're going to see this team have some pretty wild fluctuations this year. And you sort of caught all of that at once in the Central Michigan game. Obviously, when they came out in the second half and roared to two really quick scores, you felt like, oh, man, they got it together. You know, they had a rough time at the end of the second quarter, but they're putting it back together. And then you have the next few drives where they let him go down the field, and it winds up not really being a game. And I almost think that Central Michigan game, in a lot of ways, is going to prove to be a microcosm for this season, because I think that you're going to see some pretty up and down play, and some moments where it seems like they're getting ready to break out, and some other moments where you kind of come crashing back to earth a little bit.
No, I think that's a fantastic point. We talked about the youth when that first depth chart was released, as you mentioned, just five guys on the two deep. And it was a lot different, especially offensively, than what we saw from week one to week two. But I think that's a great point. He's Kevin Flaherty of 24/7 Sports. Always appreciate the time, man. We'll do it again soon.
All right. Thanks a lot, Nick.
All righty. That's Kevin Flaherty. I'm Nick Schwert, Rock Chalk Sports Talk on the new FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN. I honestly hadn't even thought about that. That notion hadn't even crossed my mind, but it makes perfect sense. When you have youth, it's not just to say, oh, this team's young, so they're going to be bad. Well, no, because their youth's pretty good, right? There are some underclassmen on this team who are really good players, and even if they didn't play well on Saturday, we would all agree, like, Mike Lee, if he had a bad game on CMU, are we going to write him off? Of course not. There are going to be fluctuations with youth. The good can be pretty good, but the bad can be pretty bad, too. And that's what I think this team is capable of. I think it was the first year of Turner Gill, right? They come out, they lose to South Dakota State. They come back the next week and beat Georgia Tech, a ranked team. You lose to South Dakota State. Was the final score 3-6? Oh, my gosh, the Turner Gill era is going to be terrible. And, you know, maybe we were right about that, but set that to the side. Next week, you come out and come back against a ranked Georgia Tech team. Fluctuations, man. Just because you lose a game and look bad doesn't mean you're bad. It means that it's going to be an inconsistent season. And I think that's probably what we look like. And maybe you go out and you lose against Ohio this Saturday, but there's going to be a game. Like, there is going to be a Big 12 game where KU's a big dog and they keep it close. And it's going to come down to the wire. It's going to happen every single year. Doesn't matter the program, doesn't matter the coach, doesn't matter the state of the program. It happens every year. It may happen a couple times for KU. And then we're going to say, you know what? Maybe we're not as bad as we thought we were after that CMU loss. It's 20 after the hour, Rock Chalk Sports Talk on the new FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN.